Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Curious Ulsterman podcast, the podcast designed to equip you with the tools and wisdom you need to thrive as an adult. I am your host, Johnny, aka the Curious Ulsterman, and today I sit down with my friend, Marty, to discuss how to become a photographer. In today's episode, we discuss the steps you can take to become a professional photographer and the resources available to develop your skills along the way and how to encourage and foster your creativity as well. So without further delay, here is today's episode on how to become a photographer. Marty, welcome to the show.
How's it going? How are you? You all right?
Yes, I'm not too bad. I'm actually really glad you're on here because for the audience who don't know, I've known you for years, although we didn't talk to each other for years and then I randomly bought an iPad off you, then didn't talk to you again for a long time until now. But I always thought that with regards to today's topic on photography, and like I follow you on Instagram and I see some amazing shots and some of the like world famous people you've been fortunate enough to, you know, photograph during a gig and stuff. Sort of think to myself, wow, that's amazing. I thought, well, there's only one person to have on the show then. You're also just a good all right guy. I always remember being at school and you're always that like happy go lucky dude. And you know, so I'm glad to have you here, man. And is this your first podcast?
This is 100% my first podcast. So when you messaged me, I was just like, well, so I appreciate it. Like I've caught ones in the past. I remember seeing the one with Sarak.
Oh yeah. He's a character, isn't he?
He pops up in random places, like in the gyms and stuff I would be into. Yeah. But it's cool, man. Like I just, as you say, like, we knew each other in school quite like well enough. Would have been games and music, really. We would have been talking about.
Oh yeah, yeah, 100%.
And then just the way things go, and people get that age, and they move, or well, they leave school, go on to work and stuff. We hadn't, well, bar like social media, probably bits and pieces. But you showed up to buy an iPad off me, and you have a firm handshake because I remember that. I was just like, oh. Going to play guitar afterwards, like nah.
I was taught by a few good lads at work about having a firm handshake, so I was like, I think I need to tone it down a little bit. I was kind of like, because I'm not a big dude, I always think I probably need to like give an extra firm handshake, and everybody's like, oh, it's a bit hard enough on a handshake, like a bit unnecessary.
I'm not good with a handshake. Like when I think about it, you're probably like a wet sheet of lettuce when you grab my hands. They're quite dainty hands.
However, once those fingers touch the fretboard, they just come into their own.
I find today that's not the case, but that might be being from trying badminton yesterday. My wrist is shot. Really? Yeah, I don't play it, so I'm probably playing with like the worst technique possible. I'm just walloping it, but my whole right side sore. But I was in the gym yesterday and today, so maybe that's also things to do with it as well. So,
fair play. No, me and you both know Rue, and Rue's been coaching me a fair bit and like proper lifting technique and stuff. Right. I train with Rue a fair bit, yeah. For the audience, you may remember Rue was in series one talking about getting over your fear of the gym. But
I didn't recognize that. I wish I would have known that. I'll have to watch that. No, Rue's an absolute star. Like he had showed me, like I'd been in and out of gyms and stuff like that, but you're like me and compounds and stuff I didn't know anything about. So right before the world sort of crapped itself, he showed me a lot of things, but also phenomenal guitar player. Like I would say the best I know, like,
oh, or just really?
Fair musician point. In general. Yeah, like his ear is incredible. Like I mean, I don't trust my ear to tune. I'd be like, nope, you know, like, I want to see it on a screen. But yeah, he's one of those dudes, whatever he gets into, he's just really good at it.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I think we're both lucky to know him, eh? But we're lucky to have you on, actually, on the same subject, as to have you on to talk about getting into photography, because this is something I'm interested in that I am big into space, so I like to do astrophotography,
yes,
albeit badly, but at the same time, there's a lot of people who certainly over lockdown, maybe got into the hobby of photography and maybe want to take it to the next level, or there's people who have been doing photography somewhat seriously and they now want to be taken seriously and get into the game, maybe start doing gigs and that kind of thing, which you have a wealth of experience with, which I'm really looking forward to this discussion. And I'm sure the aspiring photographers in the audience are as well. But before we sort of get into the nitty gritty details, you know, where did it all begin for you? Like what was that spark, that moment that made you think, right, I'm going to pick up a camera?
I was talking to my girlfriend about this the other day. We had touched on earlier saying there about like our generation was maybe like the first ones to sort of grow up, and then phones with cameras becoming more common. This is maybe like first year, second year. So what age would 11, 12, 13?
12, yeah.
Basically I remember getting this wee smartphone, sorry. Yeah. I had a camera, probably potato like quality, but even then I remember just having fun, like just going around being like, I took a photo of this and it's on my phone. So one of the, like, I have it seared in my brain that we had a Christmas tree one year and I just remember taking a photo of it and being amazed that that's on my phone. So as early as that, but it's kind of funny, like with all the things that I'm like very interested in now, I just did not capitalize in school whatsoever, if you know what I mean. So I didn't study music. I didn't do any sort of creative stuff at all. Bar if you run around the phones and stuff in the early days, I'm trying to think, it was maybe about 10 years ago, actually, I got my first DSLR. I think I was just looking for a new hobby, to be honest with you. I like taking photos of my phone. Why not go get something a little better and try it? And a couple of years after that, I just stumbled on this. It's like an online sort of newsagent thing, but it was all about live music in Northern Ireland. And they were just looking photographers to go to gigs, take photos of it, and then do like a review on their website. So they would give you details to log in to like a WordPress thing and modify it. That's just kind of how it got started into, you know, slightly more serious direction. But it really always just stemmed from, you know, a basic sort of hobby, really.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's where anything good really should start. You're doing it for the fun. You're doing it because it piques your curiosity. I think if you charge into something very serious, very headlong, 9 times out of 10 it's going to fail, because if you think about it really, you know, especially when you're a kid, just looking at it from a childlike perspective, nobody seriously goes into a game of tag. You know, you play tag because it's going to be fun. And then as you get older, you go into Xbox or something, because not because it's serious, but because you want to meet up with your friends online and game. And then as adults, somewhere along the way, we start to think, strangely enough, right, if I want to try something new, I need to be good at it before I begin. We don't give ourselves that permission to be bad at something before we can be good.
Absolutely.
And, you know, yeah, it's because what I like about it is the fact that you even said it, you know, even on your smartphone, it was potato quality. It was horrific, but it was the what, crawling before you could walk, before you could run. Yeah. And, you know, but that was a long journey for you. And on that journey, you obviously had to build up your skill set in that regard. So, you know, from when you got your first DSLR and it's still your hobby and you're still figuring things out, you know, what sort of active things did you do to improve your skill set within this arena? And like what resources can you recommend to the audience as well who want to start getting quite serious about taking photos?
Cool. You see, like, I've had a few friends of mine sort of ask, like, just down the line, like, you know, advice about getting a camera and stuff like that there. Maybe they've got one and they're asking, like, how can I get a bit better with this? And one of the first things I would have said to them is, like, if you're out using it, use your camera to the point where you can do things without looking at it. So what I mean by that is adjusting your main thing. So for argument's sake, if you're in manual mode for photos, there's three things you're constantly adjusting: your shutter speed, aperture, and your ISO. So
yeah.
My camera's over here, like, so, because I'll just show you, this is silly. So there's a GoPro rig to this.
That's a serious bit of kit.
So the reason this is on is that the company that I work for are actually looking to do like a bit of like hiring PR essentially. So my boss is like, we're going to strap a GoPro to your camera setup for the next few days.
Yeah.
Just to get that cool like point of view thing. It's a ton weight now with it. So I'm taking it to a job in Limelight tonight and then a big rave on Saturday as well. But
fair enough.
Yeah. This camera I know inside and out. I can adjust things without looking at it. And, like, I'll have it up to my face adjusting things, but that's just a level of comfortability that came from use.
But
that's just from a technical aspect, like knowing your equipment. But the other thing I would say is just go out and use it. So obviously it took me a long time to get that comfortable with it. I would have been like, it's like if you handed me an Android phone, but I'm used to using my iPhone, like I couldn't use it. It would be like vice versa.
Yeah.
Like whatever you're used to. So obviously it didn't start that way, but it was just a case of bringing my camera wherever I went. It was different circumstances, taking photos of different things and realizing what did and didn't work. But then alongside that, YouTube is phenomenal.
Yeah, 100%, man.
I learned everything. Like, see, like, I didn't use a flash on the camera for 5 years, probably. And when I had to, I just didn't understand it at all. I'm sure you've looked up things before that you had no idea about and been like, that's cool, I didn't know that worked that way. Yeah, but
podcasting mainly.
Yeah. So, like, and then another one is just talking to people that know a little better. So, like, you could reach out to someone that you do know is pretty experienced. I'm really transparent. Like I'll tell people like times I just completely screwed the pitch in jobs and stuff like that there.
Yeah.
Just from lack of experience and stuff like that. But I do remember when I first started, especially in the like nightlife scene. So like the company I work with do a ton of like nightlife stuff, and that was kind of where I cut my teeth doing it really. And I remember it was just certain aspects I just did not understand at all. And then it just took me to have a conversation with one of the guys that had been doing it a lot longer for things to click. And the quality of what I was putting out just went leaps and bounds. And I felt more confident in what I was doing. And I think when you get into that flow of things, you're constantly looking to improve it. So there's a few things there. Like, I think first and foremost, being out using your camera and getting familiar with it and just trying loads of different things. So like there's, in my opinion, there really isn't rules. Like, I mean, there's obvious things like out of focus shots and stuff, but like, I would have said I didn't necessarily have an eye for photography. You know what I mean? Like you hear people talking about this, like it's almost like they're framing it in their mind before they've taken the photo. Like to some description I can do that. But for me, it's more about having the camera up to my face and going down, and then I'll know. It's like, oh, that actually looks kind of cool. So I don't know. I would have said my way of doing it was a wee bit more guerrilla. Like I would just try it. And it was just like, like you can see me bend down and take a shot and be like, that's crap. I won't even hit the button. just because I don't like the look of it. But there's tons there. But especially like genre specific things. So say someone wanted to take photos of gigs. That's an environment that's totally different from being out in daylight, obviously. But if you talk to someone that did it or looked up sort of what they expect at a concert setting on YouTube, exactly, there's so much you can do. So much.
Yeah.
That's where I would recommend.
Yeah. So there's that wealth of knowledge and also I really liked what you said there about, you know, admitting your faults in this, in that it wasn't this smooth journey of you just took steadily better pictures. You know, you did improve, and then there'd be like, you screwed up like a gig, or you screwed up, you know, this particular shot because you didn't know what you were doing, say, but when the flash was added. And it took having that mentor or coach to, you know, look at it and go, well, actually, I've made all the mistakes before. And here is the here's the solution I learned the hard way. So would you say then, apart from just getting out there and doing it, and you know, you're not going to take perfect pictures. Obviously, it's all about the practice. But would you? So what you're saying then is you actually get involved in, say, photography groups and or find someone who knows what they're doing to coach you, perhaps.
Yeah, for sure. Like there's more of the way you said photography groups. Like there's, I'm sure you've seen things advertised now where it's like it could be just a quite like a tutorial afternoon where it's a photo walk or something like that. There, like there's tons of stuff, and yeah, I think a lot of people would be quite receptive to it because it's no different, in my opinion, than like you know those sort of like group boot camp things for the gym.
Yeah.
It gets people out there, and then some people thrive in that sort of community environment. But yeah, absolutely. Like I've had friends before that have said, like, can we just go drive somewhere? Somewhere kind of cool and take some photos. Like, yeah, fair enough. And it might just be a case of them turning to me and going, like, trying to freeze that bird, but I don't really know what I'm doing wrong here. And then I would just try to help them. I think of it as problem solving. So the way there was those three things that you're constantly adjusting, if you adjust one it throws another off, so it's kind of like you want to put your shutter speed up, then what else do you have to do to compensate to keep the exposure the same because it's going to change. So like I'll try and like if you and I were out taking photos, that would be how I would be working it. So if you turned around and said I want to freeze that bicyclist, is that what it's called?
I think that's the word. Yeah, it must be. Yeah.
Say you wanted to freeze that, but you wanted the shot sharp, but you wanted his wheels blurry. I would be like, well, what would you do with your shutter speed? So you want to show motion. So what should that be? Slower. But then that's going to overexpose your shot as it is. What else do you have to adjust to change that? But say you set aperture, it's like, but then your aperture might make it more blurry, or it might ruin a bit of that separation from the background, like that sort of way. So I would try and approach it in a way to get the person to think. Once you have that, you can recall it very quickly. Because again, something like a gig, for example, the lights change on a dime. So there's no like set settings that will work for any one job the same way, if that makes sense. Which is a problem I had at the start. I used to write things down like, this is good for people shots, and then go into a different environment. It's like, what? there's been a lot of mistakes made. So.
Yeah, but it's all part of I've made a ton of mistakes in podcasting as well. So it's just all part of the learning process. But something I think it is really worth defining is, you know, you said ISO, aperture, and your shutter speed. Could you just briefly go into what all three of them are and why they're important?
Well, first off, technically they all do the same thing, in my opinion. So I think of it as you're controlling light or manipulating it, maybe. So your ISO is probably the most important one there. So I could be wrong with this, but as far as I know, the image sensor, you're basically adjusting how sensitive it is to light when you increase or decrease your ISO. So it's not it's not even an abbreviation. As far as I know, I think that is just the word ISO. ISO.
Okay.
So generally speaking, if you're in a lower light environment, you'll be raising that. But you get certain things come into play there, like grain. So you're trying to control
heard of this,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of the benefit where it comes with like higher end equipment. You can push that way more with like getting that grain and things like that there. So, but again, it's not necessarily something that's important for someone just trying to get their foot in the door. Like, but yeah, that's what ISO basically is. Your aperture is, I was trying to think if I had a lens here, I could show you because it would actually be a better example.
Ooh. Yeah.
Let's see if this works or not. Where is it?
Okay. But it's essentially these are all like a triad of what's the most important to know with getting into photography. Essentially, like these are the three pillars, so to speak.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like you can see the aperture changing in this as we lever. So see that back panel opening?
Yeah, yeah.
So basically when it's like that wide open, there's a ton of light coming in, but that'll also give you that sort of blurry background that everybody's mad for now. Your aperture basically doubles as how much of the stuff is in focus and can help you in a low light environment. So say you want to keep your ISO low, you would use a lens wide open, but that will introduce another issue where your focus is so narrow, so you can be out of focus very easily. And then your shutter speed, again, so the longer it's open, the more light comes in, the quicker it shuts, the less light, but in turn, that's also what freezes motion or shows it. So it's almost like there's a lot of double meanings for each of them, but effectively, it's all about controlling light. So you'll hear people describing it as a triangle, an exposure triangle. So, yeah, so they all do the same thing, but that's why I think of it as problem solving. So, I want to take a photo of this guy in the bike, but I want it to be really, I want the background to be super blurred out, and I want his wheels to be blurry, but I want him to be sharp. So you'd be trying to find that medium of the shutter speed that freezes him, but shows blur in his wheels. So it's crucial that people understand that. But that, again, you'll only get that if you shoot manual. So
And that requires you taking a lot of bad photos.
Absolutely. Like, as a professional, I'll tell you now, you take a lot of bad photos. So, because particularly in DSLR, so I'd nearly suggest people start off in a different system that's only became more popular in recent years. But DSLR, when you take a photo, you're just looking through a mirror being reflected out the lens. So you see what your eyes see. You don't see what the camera sees. So it's called crimping, where you'll take a photo and then look down. It's like, oh, Jesus, I'm massively overexposed. I'll have to adjust that. So like, even as a professional, like looking out, like if I went in to take photos of a bar inside or whatever, and it was just like a shot of the venue, sometimes you can guess like roughly what settings will work. But a lot of the time you have to look at the photo you've just taken. It's like, oh, it's underexposed. I'll adjust that. And then it might take two shots after that to get it right.
Yeah. So it's becoming friends with, I don't want to use the word failure, but mistakes. It's like, you know, it is what it is. You know, it's not like you're not going to do photography for a week and then become like a Nat Geo photographer and all this kind of thing. Cause I feel like that's the problem with a lot of people when they try new things. Like, there's this notion that unless they get good at it really quickly, they'll just throw in the towel or get discouraged. And they don't have this notion that, you know, the way I always see it is it's like riding your bike. If all of us fell off our bike consistently when we started and then decided, screw that, I'm tired of falling off, none of us would ever ride a bike. But for some reason, when we're kids, you know, albeit with the encouragement of adults, you know, you crack on, even though your shins and elbows are mega sore, you crack on. And then, but somewhere along the way, you know, in the process of becoming an adult, we tend to lose that fun factor. We need to actually be good at this before I commit to it. It's like, I think that you gotta give yourself permission to be silly. You give yourself permission to just have fun with it. And then as you gain experience, then you can become a bit more serious about it. And then obviously apply the in particular to photography, the advice you've just given.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Like there's still stuff. Like, I remember, it's funny. Like, so just to give a real firm example of that, when I first started with who I work with now, it was a lot of nightclub stuff. And
yeah,
like I really learned what I was doing with the camera then, but it's the weirdest environment to do that in, because it's dark. Like, you're working with lights that change constantly and a flash. So you're trying to balance those two things. But I remember, like, say we got a job booked in and it was during the day, like we would be freaking out, being like, I need to take photos in the daylight. Totally different. And like, it's the silliest thing. Like, I don't think that's the most common way to be. I think most people have a better understanding of how to do that. But we were all like, ooh. Well, at least me and another guy I remember we were talking to, just like, it's funny, like we just couldn't take photos during the day. It took us we had to sit and think about it, like, because we're so accustomed to a different environment entirely, and then obviously you do more of that sort of stuff and you realize you just need to tweak your approach though.
Yeah, 100%. I like the fact that you say it's all about problem solving. And I think what's really cool about photography is that when you're becoming a problem solver in photography, that's a transferable skill to other areas of life. So even though you pick this up as a hobby in your workplace, if rather than something goes wrong and you falter and you start to get stressed and lose the head, you suddenly go, well, your natural problem solving skills in a demanding environment, say even such as a nightclub or a client you're taking a photo of, you know, the natural, it's the wrong word to use, but analogy, like the muscle, you know, you're training that muscle of problem solving. And obviously the more you do it, the more it's going to have even more better benefits in your life outside of photography. So it's interesting that such a skill as photography actually has a lot of transferable skills to the real world as well. And like, you know, even coming up for job interviews or sorting out problems in your personal life, wherever. It's interesting that I never actually considered how useful photography could be in that regard.
Yeah, I suppose it's like there's so many opportunities to learn different things in different areas entirely. So yeah, as you say, you just learn from one thing and move it to the other. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So after you've been doing photography for some time as a hobby and enjoying it, when did you know it was the right time to take it to the next level, to start becoming a professional photographer? Like, what was that? What was that moment like? And how did you go about it? Like, you know, did you do some free gigs, or did somebody take you under their wing, or how, describe that journey?
Cool. Well, again, I think I had had that DSLR, the first one, for a couple of years, but I had a background of working in retail. And that was always what I did for work, really. But what was it? Yes, so basically there was a girl that worked in, it's called Cruise Fashion at the time. It was just a clothes shop, but I'd known her from years before. Didn't realize she worked in there until I started. But she was good friends with who is now my boss when they were in school or college, I'm not really sure. But she had actually mentioned to me, it's just like, oh, my friend runs a media company. You should, like, that might be cool for you to do a bit of work for her since you're into photos. And that's kind of all it was. And then just lo and behold, maybe a month or two later, I seen them advertising this. And I just chased them up. But prior to that, that's when I was doing that sort of stuff for that online sort of music thing. The sort of live music photography. So I think it was a place called liveanddiemusic.com. Absolute mouthful. I don't know if it's still there enough. But yeah, I maybe did like maybe three gigs. And it was cool just because I'd never taken photos of bands. And that's the only way you could... that's how a lot of people recommend you get into that. You just see if you can take photos on behalf of some sort of news agent. And you know, plus I get you into a gig or two for free to do it like.
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I've done that a few times before, and then with Hype, I ended up starting with them. But again, like the learning experience was one thing there. So it was the sort of thing I really didn't have a lot of applicable experience. So I just kept at them like I would love to try this sort of thing. And then they basically said, well, we'll send you in for a few trial shifts alongside one of our other guys. So you can learn about it. Cause, basically I had no experience that was relevant, like taking photos of people and that environment, as well. Like it's quite different from general photography. And I hadn't done anything that was people centric at the time cause I just started. So for about 3 weeks, on a Friday, I would have went in to El Divino at the time, if you remember it.
I remember El Divino.
I would have spent a couple of hours on a Friday there. And I remember it was getting to that point, I just felt like I didn't know I was confident enough in certain areas, and then other things. I didn't feel like I was very creative, really. And then that's what I say, I end up speaking to another guy who worked for the same company, and he gave me some tips, and it was just like, just clicked. And then after that point, so they took me on as a junior photographer at the time, and then it just went from there, slowly built up more and more nights, and then working in different things, not like I wasn't limited to just nightclubs and things like that. But yeah, it was definitely a lot of learning on that job, but that was just stemmed from an opportunity I seen, and then just kept at them until they allowed me to do it. So, which is, that's what my boss has said to me before. It's like, you were definitely the keenest. And I was just like, I was, but I had no experience.
So having a good attitude and being coachable is key then, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, I mean, there's no way I could have went in with that with ego, because I didn't know what I was doing. they were very good. So like, yeah. You couldn't be too, not that they were doing it in a mean way at all, but like I could see how someone could be discouraged if they got feedback. So prime example, I've still got these photos somewhere. They were awful. But you've maybe seen light trails before in photos.
Yes.
So that's quite a common thing in nightclubs. You take the photo and move your camera off to the side and it would create this nice sort of effect. And I remember I took one off these two guys, and there was a light here, and it just bled onto the guy's face and turned him blue, like just his face.
Oh no!
And I thought, this is amazing. This is so cool. Like, I can't believe that worked. And then I sent the photos in, and then I got feedback basically saying, like, "Yeah, this guy's blue. We can't have that." It's just like another one again. It's so funny to think back. I thought it was class at the time, but there was an empty. Like an empty Red Bull glass, like a plastic promo glass on a table, and two guys wanted their photo taken. And instead of focusing on the two guys, I focused on the cup that was empty for one. And I was just like, oh, that's so artsy. Look at that nice out of focus subject in the background. The two guys that obviously wanted their photo taken, it just didn't cross my mind. There's plenty of things like that. So I learned very quickly, like, what is kind of stupid.
So be receptive to feedback, but don't take it personally.
Absolutely, yeah. Like if you go in with the approach I had, with very little experience, absolutely. Like you can't be running around like you're King Dick, thinking you know everything. But yeah,
fair enough.
Learned a lot that way,
and but like, I think that's the case with most things, isn't it? It's that. You're obviously always going to be the new guy somewhere, and it's a bitter pill to swallow to be not knowing anything and just having to constantly ask, I have no idea what I'm doing. But I suppose if you go in there with that coachable mindset, and then before you know it, you're teaching the new guy or girl, like showing them the ropes, and obviously then you'll be a far better leader as well, because you'll not have that ego. You'll just go like, well, I know what it's like to be in your shoes. I imagine a lot of photography groups are like that. Everybody was a newbie once at something, and you know what I mean, people are more than likely to give you a helping hand along the way, especially if it's a shared hobby or a shared interest.
For sure. Like there's definitely been instances like that, and you know, there'll always be someone that's shot something that you haven't. So like I have the same approach with everything. So there's always going to be someone who's better at you at something, and there's always going to be someone who's worse at it than you.
Learn from the ones who are better, and help those who maybe have a little bit more to learn that you can share.
Yeah. So I think they're not necessarily in this country, like, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's a sort of area of things where like people are like, they don't want someone copying someone, if you know what I mean. Like,
I know what you mean.
But at the end of the day, like, I could give you the same camera, the same setup, and say you had been taking photos for the same time as me, and we were taking photos of the same thing. It's still going to come out differently anyway, even if we have the same understanding, same knowledge, just different eyes, different creative process, different mindset when you go into editing. So, like, nobody's going to replicate what you're doing. You're like, you don't need to lose anything in teaching someone something.
I've used this analogy before on the podcast when I was discussing you know, how all people are like different flavors and stuff. It's like there's hundreds of podcasts all overlapping with subjects, so people go, why bother? Why if I want to talk about this because this interests me, but there's 20 other podcasts doing the same. And it's like, well, yeah, true. But when you walk down the bread aisle in a supermarket, there's 100 different types of bread. And not everybody likes, you know, the same bread. Like me personally, I like seeded bread. And both my brothers always give me a lot of grief. And why has he brought in that fucking bird seed again? Toss it out. They like white bread. So it's like, you know, and the same with podcasting. I'm someone's cup of tea. Some people like the way I podcast. Other people can't stand it. And that's okay. In the same way, I imagine with photography, me and you could take a picture of the same subject. And because of your artistic flair and my different approach to it, we would have a slightly different, you know, take on it. And some people will prefer your photo over my photo and vice versa. But then that's the beauty of it, isn't it? We're all creative. I really liked what you said earlier in that, you know, you are a very talented musician, a very talented photographer, but you didn't do any of this in school. Like, you know, for whatever reason, you know, this is all something you have taught yourself and learned and grinded through to get to the skill level you're at. But some people will prefer your artistic view or your artistic interpretation and your creativity over others, even though you're doing the same thing. And I think that lifts a massive burden off people who go, yeah, but I don't want to be that guy or girl who's taking a photo of the same thing and 100 other people have done the same thing. Well, so what? Do you know what I mean? It's nobody's ever taken the photo you're about to take and nobody's ever going to put the same flair and spin on it that you have, you know? I think that lifts a lot of pressure off people and allows people to like fully express their creativity.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, say, like, I have a friend of mine that's just recently got his sort of first camera and he's loving it. But for example, he went to the zoo with his camera, which is nearly what I would advise a lot of people to do, because what's better to take photos of for the first time than cool animals?
Yeah, exactly.
But he had one of them featured on like Dublin Zoo's Instagram. So it's a friend of mine called Sean. Yeah. So, I mean, he's not long into that side of things either. So, but you know what? Like, there'll be tons of people that have went to the zoo and took the photos because it's cool. So, like, I think people get too attached to this sort of mindset of being unique when it doesn't need to be. Like, I mean, as you say yourself there, like, you could take the 10th photo of this animal that someone else has taken that day, but it doesn't matter. You've taken that one there. And it could well end up nicer or better than the other.
And it ends up in the Dublin Zoo Instagram.
Yeah. So, it's just a case of separating it from that, because it doesn't really matter. That's not what it's about, really, is it?
Yeah.
I'm kind of
that leads. Go on.
I know. I was just gonna say, like, it kind of make me feel like when I do the sort of guitar cover things that I like to do on YouTube, like, I'm not the first person that's covered these songs, like, and there might be someone that does it technically better than me. So it doesn't really matter. It's just like, it's my version of it. It's what I wanted to do with it.
And what's most important, you enjoy it.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. Just do it, but, really.
but what you said about your friend Sean actually really leads into the next question nicely. What's a good starting kit for photographers? Like, what is, because I feel like a lot of people feel like they have to go out and spend big money on get this and the latest kit. What would be a good all round starter pack that isn't going to break the bank, in your opinion?
Well, see, when I first got that DSLR, I got back in 2012, I think it was, I literally just looked at reviews. So there's a lot of camera brands out there. I think a lot of people get sucked into Canon because it's kind of seen as like, this is photography. I think people should stop that. It's a weird thing, in my opinion. So the amount of times I'm out in a job and someone will just go to you, why don't you use Canon? So I have a Nikon sitting over there. But it's always from people that know nothing, in my opinion. There's nothing wrong with them as a brand. They're great, but it's just a lot of the people that have them tend to think it's only Canon out there. It's weird to me. But I literally just looked at the budget beginner DSLR from Nikon and Canon. And the Nikon was a little cheaper and it got better reviews. So that's what I went for. So I think...
Fair.
Budget-wise, it was maybe about £300 or so. And you know, it was fine. I used that. I even used it professionally for a few years as well before upgrading. and it was phenomenal. So you could probably get you generally get a kit lens, like an 18 to 55 kit lens, and the body maybe for like around the £300 mark. But I would actually suggest that, say, people went that route with either system to look into their 35mm budget lens. So it's just because it'll allow them to open it up to 1.8 aperture, and that's when you get, excuse me, just got a tickle. It'll allow them to get that blur, that, because that's what everybody associates nearly with high quality photos now, like blurry background. But it'll be a lens that'll be good in low light. So yeah, I honestly would say whatever the current beginner budget or option is for either of those systems will be very good. And then down the line, I would recommend them to get a prime lens, which is the 35mm from either system. So the budget one's probably going to be £150 or so. But that's something to get into once you understand the basics and stuff. But the only thing I would say there is a bit of a curveball, only because I've changed systems recently. Have you heard of mirrorless cameras by any chance?
No, I've never heard of them.
It's quite, you know, it's been around for a while, but like once I tell you the benefit, it's silly. You wonder why people use the more conventional ones. So this thing, although it's rigged up like a mass weapon flashing thing on it, this is a conventional DSLR. So when you look through the viewfinder, you are looking at a mirror being reflected out the lens. But you'll see how much more compact this one is. But this is a little Sony I got. It's just a real sleek camera, but it's like very new. I'm terrified of using it. But it's mirrorless, so it doesn't have this the mirror that's in the DSLR. So the most beneficial thing of this, when I have that camera on and I put my eye up to the eyepiece, you're actually looking through a screen. You're not looking through glass being reflected out the lens. But the big thing with that is, remember I said before, even if you have a vague idea what settings to use in a situation on a DSLR, you're probably going to have to tweak your settings. You look through this, you see what your photo is going to be like. You see your live exposure. So you can adjust it while it's up to your face and take the shot that's done. It's mental. So, but also there's a lot of benefits there, like the autofocus systems are a lot higher end, something to do with mirrorless technology. So I would nearly suggest personally someone gets into this quite early on. So I know Sony have a few more affordable mirrorless cameras. So personally, depends, like there's still a place in DSLRs. Like I use that one in any environment where I think there's potential for something to go a bit rowdy. So at a gig, I don't want to use the nice one. Like that one's taken so many knocks, it's fallen off risers on stage, it's had drinks spilled over it, like it's, and also the shutter count is like rated to 150,000, and it's nearly 500,000 now, it hasn't broken yet. So like DSLRs are like, they're sturdy, but I would say just look into the market that way. Like, so you're talking around £300 for like a decent DSLR package. I think and then you can go up the chain. Like the one I use mainly for a lot of work is the D750, and it's a bit of an older one now, but it was their entry level professional one. And it was so popular just because it was the price point, and like there's a lot of wedding photographers will use two of them, and it covers everything. But yeah, I would stick with the beginner Canon, Nikon, or just for a bit of, like, if you like the idea of that real forward thinking style of things, go to something like Sony for one of their more affordable mirrorless ones. I think Canon make a pretty good affordable mirrorless as well. Don't think Nikon's quite there yet on that side of things, but that's what I would recommend personally. Like, I used to be obsessed with gear, constantly looking at upgrades. I sort of dialed that back a wee bit because it was sort of getting in the way of things nearly. But the mirrorless stuff, just the way I described to you there, the fact that you can see that is, it's a massive time saver.
Exactly.
it could lead to you getting a shot you might have missed because you had the wrong settings in the SLR, which has happened to me before. So,
and you don't want to, and you don't want to miss that one in a million shot.
Yeah, like see a wedding photographer, like say you're lining up for the first kiss sort of shot, or you know, you make a surprise sort of thing, and you had your other body, you had your other camera set up for a really dark room initially.
Yeah.
So you just picked it up, took the shot, and you're like, oh, bollocks. Whereas if you had the mirrorless, you would know, like, you'd be adjusting it while it's on your face. But then that sort of comes in line with what I was saying before about getting so comfortable that you can make your adjustments without really being like, ugh. So that's what I recommend.
So mirrorless, mirrorless is the future, but you know, there's plenty of other good budget options.
Oh, absolutely. You might pay a little more for even a beginner mirrorless just because it's quite a bit newer. They've been around for like 10 years, but only recently there's a lot of people that have been switching from conventional setups to them. I wanted to do it about 3 years ago, but I wanted a camera that did video and photo very well, and Sony just came out with that like 4 months ago. So
fair enough.
I'm slowly switching over. It's expensive to change systems, so I'm sort of like doing it.
Yeah, something that's a bit more palatable. Yeah, someone's a bit more palatable to the wallet, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So with all your experience then, on the day-to-day, what does a good, an average, and a bad day look like as a photographer? And I feel like asking this to all the professions I have on, because I feel like it gives a much more realistic worldview, because I think it's easy to look at only the good. So I think it's important to get that full picture, you know, of, you know, what's the best time to be a photographer? What is the normal average day? And then what's like, crap, it's absolutely horrible being a photographer right now. So what does that experience look like for you? Just to give aspiring photographers the idea, this is what you're really in for.
Cool. We'll start with the good there. Like when I hear that, the first thing I think of is like when the opportunities for really cool jobs come up. So the likes are like in the summer there, like once everything started to open up a bit more after COVID. So I ended up taking the majority of photos for Custom House Square, Belsonic, and AVA, that big DJ thing. Although the DJ thing isn't really my scene, but like they were all really cool big events with like lots of production, lots of people at them, everything, lots of cool bands and artists. Like that was a class thing. Obviously that's very time of the year dependent sort of thing, but there is cool jobs like that obviously come up. But I mean, that was when it was like taking photos of Tom Jones and stuff like that there, and I can't actually remember who was involved, but that was the first night of it. Like, but I mean, that was really cool, like getting to do stuff like that there, and I love those big massive sort of events, and there's like lots of killer production and stuff like that there. Just when it aligns with something you already have an interest in, which would be music, live music, that sort of thing. Say an average, I mean, it's hard to say. So like today, for example, I'll be going to the Limelight in Belfast to take photos of a club night. So that's very much like bread and butter for the company I work with. They do a ton of like nightlife sort of stuff as well. So during the day, you're going to be editing whatever your previous day's work was, if you want to try and keep on top of things. So like processing stuff the day after is usually the best way for me to do it, just so I don't have like backlog sort of sitting up. And then, you know, prepping for whatever shit you have later. So it's, you know, it's going to be charging all your equipment, making sure that's all packed and ready to go. And then you're in the job, you're just doing what you're meant to do. So it can differ, but like say certain clients could be more picky than others and request certain sorts of things, so you have to take that all on board what you're doing. You might have the very extremes there where it's someone, it's just like you do your thing, you know what we're after, or you might have someone a little more on your shoulder being like, don't like that. we want it more in this sort of like, I've done edits for people before who's been like, don't really like that, could you do a different one, could you make it darker, could you make it lighter, or send you a photo of someone else's and be like, oh, it kind of like this sort of direction. So there's quite a lot of variables. But I think a bad Let me see. Depends what it is, really. Like, maybe just a real less than ideal situation, I would think. I can't really think of one in particular that's been that bad. I remember on one occasion I fell down a flight of stairs and my flash broke in two. It was funny. No. Like, where it attaches onto the camera, it was just, it was like it was shaved off. That whole part just broke.
Oh, no.
I took two steps down the stairs and my feet just slipped from under me, and the manager for the bar came rushing in, and I think she was so concerned that I might like make a claim or something. She's like, "Oh, it's totally dry here," and I was just like, "I slipped."
Yeah.
I nearly slipped walking back up again to show you where it is, and you just seen me. But the flash just snapped in two, and I ended up, yeah, ironically the cables were still attached, so I ended up like using duct tape to tape it back together for the night. And it works. So I mean, that was very much not ideal.
See, that problem solving we were talking about earlier comes into play.
but then I'd say the only sort of bad thing is you can often be in positions where it's less than ideal. So like, trying to think, any of that sort of big event photography stuff, like you might have like an artist on, they say no stage access, but there's nowhere for you to shoot them from. Like, you can't get into a photo pit, so you have to be in the crowd with people, and it makes the job an absolute nightmare. That's as bad as it gets, really, in my opinion. Like, I mean,
but the fact that you took you so long to reply gives me a good indication there's not many of those days, which is good to hear.
No, like, I mean, for the most part, it is quite an enjoyable job, and like, especially see if you're a freelancer and you sort of choose whatever you want to do. Like the nightlife stuff, there can be nights where you're really annoyed at people. Like people are drunk, they act the ways they shouldn't. So like, I've definitely turned around to people and be like, "Can you stop poking me in the shoulder? Like, if you want a photo, ask me."
Exactly.
Spill their drink over the back of me while poking me to get a photo taken. Like, that's annoying. Like, I'm not gonna lie, but once alcohol's in the equation, like, it's, what can you do?
Anything goes. That's it gives a much more broader perspective then, rather than just the grass is greener on the other side. I'm going to be a photographer. Being a photographer sounds pretty good by the sounds of it, but at the same time, it gives a much more realistic, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. The next question I have is, on this like journey to become a photographer, you know, what would be the lessons you can share with the audience, you know, like any major lessons that you've learned from start to finish that you can share with aspiring photographers or just the audience in general?
I would say preparation is a big one. So, like,
very good.
Just because your equipment is kind of volatile at times, so have spare batteries and have them charged. It's a big one, and I can give you a really good example of that. When I was doing that freelance article thing, the gig stuff, Panic of the Disco played in Mandela Hall, which was class. Yeah, I wish I would have actually just went to that. But I had my first ever proper paid job after that with the company I work with now. And basically, I had one battery for my previous camera, and it showed its charge by three markers. And I'd been shooting for maybe a couple of hours, and then looked down, and it just went from 2 to 1. And I thought, you know, I've been shooting for like 2 hours. It's lasted that long on those first two, so I'll probably have a couple of hours less than this one, or at least, you know, enough to get me for the job. But 10 minutes into the job, the camera just shut down. And I was just like, what? Like,
No.
And worst thing is, this was a club that had like a guest DJ in. So it's a bigger deal than like, you know, a typical club night. And I was out the front trying to work out what was wrong with my camera. And the PR manager for that club was out, just like, "Oh, Marty, can you come in? The DJ is up in the VIP room. We just want to get some shots of him before he goes on stage to do his thing." And I just sort of stand there like, like trying everything, knowing that my battery's just dead, I don't have a spare. And then none of the other guys that worked for us shot on Nikon. So I was like, oh, what is going on? So someone else ended up having to come and do the job. So learned very quickly. No. Yeah, you need to get another battery. Like, so preparation's massive. But I think the way you said before about taking criticism and things like that, not taking it personally, because especially if it's someone giving you the opportunity, like that's what it was for me. Like, I didn't have any... I had very limited experience and no connections in the environment, or sorry, in the industry, which has changed now, obviously. But it was those guys that gave me my footing in it as well. So, but yeah, I think that those are probably the biggest ones. And then just try things as well. So, like, if someone says something, like, say you have a bit of a wacky idea, just try it. Because what's the worst thing that's going to happen? You're going to have a crap photo, but like, just experiment with things and stuff like that. Because there's a lot of stuff I only started doing after shooting for a long time, like wireless flash systems and stuff. And you can use that in a really cool way. You put it like behind people, it silhouettes them and all. And yeah, it's just experimentation, this massive thing, I think, for anything creative. I think that kind of goes a long way.
Yeah. So to summarize that, in the preparation of not necessarily what, assuming things are going to go wrong, but, you know, having spare batteries, obvious one, and maybe a spare lens or something, you know, just, you know, hope for the best, prepare for the worst kind of ideal, and, you know, good networking. And as you say before, be creative, take creative risks.
Yeah. Cause I mean, what's the word again? There's nothing bad's going to happen there. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, the worst thing is you'll have a photo that you're not going to use in your memory card or whatever the case it is, like, so. I definitely think trying it with other people helps a lot, because I obviously learned a lot from having a conversation with someone else, and that sort of helped click things a wee bit more, just because someone's brain's wired a little differently than yours. So it could be one of those things, like going out with a friend that's a little more capable with a camera. There's loads you can learn from someone else, like, that's been doing the same thing as you for shorter or longer. Like, there's always something you'll be able to pick up from someone else.
Yeah, 100%, man. And the final question I have, which everyone gets, is what's a question you've never been asked?
I see this one was a funny one to me, because I wasn't really sure what to do. I feel like people don't ask, like, what are you awful at? You don't. Like, why would anybody ever ask that? I'm pretty bad at procrastination, like.
Oh, preach. I'm really bad at that.
Yeah, just silly things. Like, say I had an hour free, and only an hour, and there's other things I could do with my time. I'll go on a YouTube tangent, and it might be like how to make glass.
yeah.
And it's just like, whoa, this is pretty sweet. And then, you know, like 10 minutes later, it could be someone restoring an old Zippo lighter. Like, and I'm sitting there like, why aren't you practicing the thing on guitar that you've been trying to get good at for months? Like, wasted an hour looking at this stuff. comes in leaps and bounds, that sort of thing. But it's a bit of a rabbit hole with camera gear as well. Like, so that's why I sort of stopped. Yeah. I used to watch YouTube video after YouTube video on like new cameras and why you shouldn't buy this, why this is better than this. And I would love to know the analytics of like how long I spent on time doing things I shouldn't be doing with my time.
I really appreciate the radical honesty there, but that's a good one. No one said that yet. What are you awful at? Because that's quite a good question, because for a start, it actually in a world where people say, oh, the world's screwed, actually when you meet someone for the first time, they only assume the best in you, don't they? You know what I mean? No one ever says, what are you awful at? They automatically assume you're good at something, or you have inherent value. That's obviously true universally. But I like that as well, because it causes some reflection, doesn't it? It's like, okay, what am I awful at, or what could I get better at? And then, like, I'm in the same boat, like with procrastination. I've gotten better, but there's times where I'm just like, I could be doing this for podcasting, and then I've wasted an hour. Like, oh no, I really needed that hour. But it is what it is. It's clearly not something we just struggle with. It seems to be a worldwide thing, but
absolutely. Yeah. It's just more pop culture than anything, I think, at this point. But yeah, it's just something that, like, it's there. Like, I mean, it happens with everything. So it could be me watching like a, there's these videos on YouTube called What Culture. You ever seen these?
No, I've not seen that.
So like they have a gaming channel as well. So it's just What Culture Gaming, but it'd be like 10 times you have to die in the opening to the game to play the rest. Does that make sense? Like you get killed at the start of it. Stuff like that. Yeah. I get sucked into, and they're 10 minutes long, and I could be there for an hour and a half. Like, with the guitar sat on me and a metronome playing because I'm actually practicing it, but I'm not. I'm watching this video. So.
I had the bright idea of setting my guitar on my lap and while I'm watching TV trying to like change chords and stuff, but within about a minute you're too busy watching and you forget you're supposed to be practicing chords, but it is what it is, isn't it?
You kind of need to turn the screens off and get a metronome out, and that's the only thing that's
exactly, be present with it. But we're getting better 1% a day, at least that's how I think about it, you know what I mean? But I just want to say to finish off, thank you so much for coming on, mate. I really appreciate it. And, you know, the wealth of information that you've given, not just the audience, but me as well. And I'll hopefully in time get better at my astrophotography. It'll be somewhat more palatable.
Yeah, I've seen it, man. Like, I think people don't give themselves enough credit, but I remember messaging you and you before. Did you just think, how did you do this? Like, but then it was through a telescope, wasn't it? With a phone?
Yeah. I had a camera through a telescope and took a picture of Jupiter. So I was well pleased with that one. I'll give myself, I was very pleased with that one. The other, the others needed some work, but I was happy with it. You know what I mean? Yeah. For an amateur.
But I mean, that's the thing. Like, yeah, you just need to try it. Like, as you did, you just sort of got into it and thought, well, I'll give it a go. Like, the worst that's going to happen is I'll have a photo that needs a bit of work or... I'll know what to improve on the next time I do it. Like, so it's all just knowledge building, really.
Yeah, 100%, man. But once again, thanks very much for coming on to discuss this. And we'll maybe even have you back on again just to shoot the shit at some point, but we'll wait and see. Yeah.
No, I appreciate it, man. It's been fun. Never been on a podcast before. So why not?
Well, hopefully this is the start of many.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
No worries. All the best.
See you later, man.
There you go, folks. That concludes today's episode. I hope you got a lot of value out of the content provided. If you did, then please do consider subscribing to the Curious Ulsterman podcast on your preferred streaming service and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. That really helps the podcast grow. Thank you very much. If you would like to follow the Curious Ulsterman on the various social media channels to view upcoming content, The Curious Ulsterman is on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and Twitch, all at The Curious Ulsterman. If you know someone who would benefit from this content, then please do share it with your friends and family on the various social media channels. You could also check out our website at www.thecuriousulsterman.com, where you can view our full catalogue of episodes across all the seasons. If you would like to get in touch with The Curious Ulsterman, then please do get in contact on the various social media channels mentioned, or there is a voice note option on our website. As always, folks, I'm open to suggestions to make this podcast a better experience for you, the listener. If you tuned in today for the first time, thank you very much, and I hope you got value from the content I provide. If you're one of our seasoned listeners, thank you so much for the continuous support. I am eternally grateful. I hope you'll join us for next week's episode, folks. But until next time, I wish you all the best. Bye for now.